Hey everybody, welcome to Hit Rewind. This episode we're discussing the Omen franchise. Not all of them, because there's a new one out! I'm not going to talk about the remake, which I don't really count when we discuss a franchise. What do you think?
I almost watched it just in case, because I knew we weren't going to talk about it, but that is the only Omen film I actually did see in theaters.
Oh, you poor man, you.
And I didn't, I will say it like this, I recall not hating it, but yeah. I also thought it definitely wasn't as good as the original.
It's the only competent, borderline competent movie that John Moore has ever directed. A guy who failed upwards so much because his movies would be really low budget and make just enough money back to keep him going. But it killed him with that last Die Hard. Piece of shit.
I will say this, for the new one that's out, apparently it's not bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Some people are saying it's the best sequel, and some are saying it's equal to the original. And a lot of it is based around the director, writer, whatever, took some risks, and he cast people that were unknown instead of stars, whatever, and that really helps sell the film. Because their performances are really unique and risk-taking that a lot of like established actors wouldn't do.
Yeah, so I might actually have to go and check that one out.
But sadly, it's not doing very well. I think it's so strange that people will jump to some franchise reboots or prequels or whatever, and then others they completely ignore. And I think people just are obsessed with ghosts. I don't know what it is, and demonic children or demonic, you know what I mean? Like things that you're supposed to trust, you know? Oh, this safe house. Oh, it's haunted or whatever. Oh, it's not safe. Oh, it's this child. She's so precocious and cute. Oh, she's a murderer. Oh, it's a teddy bear that kills, you know, that kind of stuff. Whatever happened to straight up just monsters, man?
Well, we're not afraid of monsters anymore. We're afraid of the evil within.
I guess. It's just kind of tiresome, but that trend was slowly building during the 60s because we had The Bad Seed, I believe, in 1962. And Psycho, you know, he looked like, you know, the kid next door, all grown up. And Rosemary's Baby, you know, who knew that a pregnancy, you know, with all your neighbors would be part of this witch cabal? The Exorcist as well. Like, you never expected a child to be possessed. We've kind of seen this build up, which is really common now.
Yeah, you know, it could never happen here sort of thing. And so it's, these people are so normal. How could the devil take over this poor child when everyone is just, it's all perfectly, you know, it's suburban life and stuff. Yeah. Well, actually, I don't remember where the hell they lived. Honestly,
it was like Manhattan, yeah. But The Omen feels like the closest thing you're going to get to a proper... There is a TV sequel to Rosemary's Baby, but I've never seen it. But The Omen feels like that natural progression of what would happen afterwards. What were they planning on doing with that baby? Well, The Omen kind of answers that question.
Yeah, and I will say this. The weakest thing about The Omen is, I guess, from my doing reading stuff, you know, like there's this like battle between David Seltzer's script and Richard Donner's directing, where they kind of were fighting over how ambiguous it was supposed to be that Damien is the son of the devil. And yet, as much as Donner, I think, wanted it to be more, you know, up in the air and you're not certain, he does kind of seem to direct it as pretty fucking intentional. And
well,
the ending is pretty intentional.
Yeah, well, sometimes what reads on paper as scary cannot be translated properly to the screen for the audience to understand. And it's not an art house film where it can be a little more vague. This is a studio picture with a studio star. And so I think that's what his choice was, is, hey, I got to give some more, you know, idea of this kid's maybe just a bit fucked up.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, there's certain things where you go, okay, yeah, he hires a crazy woman to be the kid's nanny, sure. You know, there's some stuff you can sit there and be, okay, yeah, this is kind of weird, but at the same time, yeah, it's way too literal to be ambiguous, and that's kind of where I get kind of annoyed with this film, is it feels at times trying way too hard to be the kid is going to be Satan on Earth, you know, and it pushes it a bit much at times.
Yeah, the wild casting of Gregory Peck, who was, you know, like Fred McMurray, like one of those American dads everybody trusted, and having him put into a position where he may have to kill his kid is a brilliant choice, in my opinion.
Yeah, although it's kind of crazy if you think about who were the other candidates for that part. You have, like, Oliver Reed and William Holden. You know, William Holden, who ends up in the sequel.
Yeah.
But, you know, they make sense. You know, Roy Schneider also makes sense. Charlton Heston, okay. But then you got, like, Charles Bronson. And apparently Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's like, you know, okay, all American dad sort of thing, sure, Dick Van Dyke, but really? I can't imagine this movie with Dick Van Dyke. I can't imagine Dick Van Dyke being able to do it, and I've seen Dick Van Dyke do serious stuff.
Yeah, I know he did a drug movie where it was The Runner Stumbles, which was a dramatic role, but the one that Charles Bronson, just no way, that never would have worked. I always think it's interesting that Death Wish was supposed to star Jack Lemmon and not Charles Bronson, and that would have been a wildly different movie.
Weirdly enough, yeah, I could see that, though. I could still see that.
But in this, I think this is the only one that has any real visual panache. Both productions after this were pretty troubled, but I feel like Richard Donner, it's weird that the Salkind saw The Omen and said, this is the guy that we needed for Superman. That's fucking weird.
Well, he handles all these practical effects really well. I mean, let us all be honest. The film's show-stopping, you know, iconic moment of David Warner getting his head, you know, cut off is still one of the most amazing practical bits. And it's shocking that it came off as well as it did.
Yeah, or there was the one with the guy, the priest gets the spear through him.
Yeah, the second doctor guy, I can't remember his name now.
Yeah,
but
I keep thinking, like, this is the perfect of the franchise. Everything kind of works out the way that they wanted it to. Huge hit. So, of course, in the 70s, it's becoming prequel city where everybody's starting to realize, oh, we need to keep these franchises going, especially Fox. I think they knew what they had with Planet of the Apes, you know, by putting them out nearly every single year. And that was like, oh, we need to have franchises all the time now to keep us going. And it's the second one, I think. I mean, I know that it was troubled because the director, Mike Hodges, was fired after 4 weeks. Because he was too slow and meticulous and the budget was getting too high. So they hired Don Taylor, who was just basically a TV guy. He had done one of the Planet of the Apes really quickly, so they hired him to do it. And I just don't think he has the eye for it. I also think it must have been rushed. And the tone of the movie seems a little bit off. Like, you feel like you're watching, like, a true sequel to the original, and then it feels like it kind of loses its way a bit.
Honestly, it feels like it should have just been a bad seed film, because, you know, it's like, yeah, it's about this, about the kid kind of finally figuring out who he wants, who he's going to be, and what he's going to do, and, oh man, there's some stuff in here that made me laugh, though. The bird attack, which is just,
yeah, oh my
it's so
God.
Cheesy and filled with dummy abuse, and when this woman gets hit by this truck, she's catapulted upwards and over the cab, and it's just, it's hilarious to watch. It's not, you're not shocked, you're not, oh my God, whoa! It's just, you can't stop laughing at it, because it's just, it's so not good.
What, is this the one that has the elevator death with the doctor?
Yeah.
Okay, that was outrageous. I couldn't believe they pulled that off. That's the one that works.
Yeah, that one's really good. But I also have to admit, this film of the films, this is the most boring one.
Yeah. Well, and William Holden is just basically copying everything that Gregory Peck does, but it seems like it takes a fucking hell of a lot longer for him to, I don't know, ignore the obvious signs.
Yeah, although I was glad to see a very, very, very young Lance Henriksen.
Yeah, that was cool. Apparently his role got cut down severely when the new director took over.
And that's a shame, because he definitely, he does kind of disappear for huge chunks of this, and it really does feel like he would have been the Iago on young Damien's shoulder, trying to lead him into what he's going to do, and it's, he just kind of... You never get enough with him.
Right. The the one thing that I didn't understand is, so is Damien taken over by something else? Because he seems genuinely sad and troubled by stuff. You know, like when he finds out who he is, which, I'm sorry, you're trying to find a 666 in your head. You got a big fucking head, kid. You can't just go like, where are you going to find that? And when he finds out, he's really upset. You know, it's like, why am I here? What is my purpose? Why did you do this to me? And then when it's time for the bad thing to happen, it's like he's taken over and become someone else. Like when he has to kill
his cousin.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I couldn't remember if it was like a stepbrother or what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a decent. It was a pretty decent scene. Yeah. Where he's in there going, you know, like how. Troubled, and then all of a sudden just how not troubled he is about it.
But does that mean like there is another person inside of him that he's possessed? What does that mean?
No, I just think that he is kind of a shit through a lot of the film. That I think he's one of those, he realizes what he's gone through puberty, basically, is what I'm trying to get to. It's, okay. He's got those feelings inside of him, and he's not sure how to express them, and then finally he does, and it's all of a sudden, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, it's just okay. Because in the first and the last movie, his character is extremely consistent in embracing the dark side of him. But the second one, it seems like he's troubled. But if you explain that the puberty, it's a metaphor for his puberty, whatever, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it's just he's conflicted. He's trying to figure out who he is, and then eventually, it clicks for him, and then everything makes sense. And now he knows who he is and what he wants to do.
The third one is the one that I was so underwhelmed by when I was younger, because if you call it the final conflict, I expected a lot more action. And when I finally saw it, I was like, oh. Okay, but now as an adult, I kind of get it. First off, you have to take the fact that the second one didn't make anywhere nearly as much money as the first one, and they easily could have phoned this in and just or just not done the final chapter. And so they try to do what they can on a very, very tight budget.
Well, and this is where I kind of laughed. I joked about how silly some of the deaths are in this one.
Yeah,
I genuinely wonder. Did Graham Baker actually think he was making a horror film? Because some of the deaths in this film are kind of comical.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning, the priest who was trying to kill Damien during the interview ends up flipped upside and lit on fire, and that sounds terrible. But it's actually kind of fucking silly how it goes, because it's just so badly executed and almost and very Rube Goldbergian, not in the way like a Final Destination kill goes, just kind of like, oh yeah, by the way, this happened. Oh, yep, there he goes. He's now upside down. Oh, now he's on fire. Ha ha ha. You know, it's...
Well, it seems like, and it doesn't say anything here, but it seems like the kind of thing where the studio interfered in, hey, times have changed. The 70s were all about psychological horror, but the 80s have become like, oh, well, we need, big special effects, you know, lots of makeup and gore, gore, gore. Because, you know, the slasher has now taken over. And so it feels like a movie that's a little torn between that. Because a lot of these deaths are not creative. They're not unique. They're done.
It's like where I'm kind of going also is like, there's a lot of baby death in this film. Because Sam Neill's entire thing is that he really just his nemesis is a baby. he's terrified of a baby. So, yes, I know it's supposed to be the second coming of Christ. I know. but still, there's a point where one of these babies is basically killed by a stray soccer ball. And I'm sorry, it's like, yes, baby death is not funny, but there's a point in this film where I'm almost expecting Leslie Nielsen to show up and start juggling babies, like at the end, like in that dream sequence in Naked Gun 3.
Yeah.
You know, and going back again, funny deaths, Damien's advisor, he gets an hot iron to the face. It's like, should be a shocking scene, but everything is so melodramatic in it.
Yes, all the music, the music has always been kind of big and boisterous. The third one is fucking insane.
Yeah, it's just, it's so self-serious that you can't take it, for the horrific thing that it is. And it just, nothing about it's horrifying. And it's like, I like, you know, Graham Baker did make a movie I like Alienation.
Yeah, that's his only good movie as far as I know. The rest of the stuff has always been kind of like, I mean, his Beowulf with Christopher Lambert is fucking cartoonishly stupid.
But, I mean, I will give some praise for this film. I do think Sam Neill is actually really good in this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If there's anything to watch in this movie, it's his performance.
Yeah, he is both very charming and also, and then almost like in the same moment flips and becomes so creepy and evil, and it's just, it's such a wonderful performance.
Yeah, it's the only, I would put in quotation marks, fun thing in the entire franchise. Sometimes it's so up its own butt about the seriousness of everything that I don't really have any fun watching it.
Yeah, and also, good lord, there are apparently a shit ton of Satanists in England.
Yeah.
like I mean, at that point, like, kind of seeing this army that he has, it's almost like, I mean, you pretty much can take over, Sam Neill. I don't think you need to worry about this Nazarene child. You can, you've got an army of people perfectly willing to to kill for you. I think you could probably do it easily.
There's a thing that seems to get lost in this movie, and maybe I just missed it, is, you know, there's a scene where they find most of the knives. There's one left, and there's a guy like on a conveyor belt, like an archaeology dig or whatever. And he puts it in his shirt and leaves or whatever. Whatever happens to that?
That's a good question. You lose track of it because it becomes less important after a while.
Yeah, it's just, I thought maybe that someone would like, oh, we're out of the knives. There's no way to stop them now. And the guy's like, oh, I got one. You know, something like that.
Well, I mean, it does make its appearance at the end of the film.
Does it? So, how did she get it then?
You know, all those priests running around doing stuff.
Yeah, but the priest never got that knife. I thought that guy who was working on the line or whatever took it for his own. He never gave it to any priest. Am I wrong?
Like I said, it's hard to tell because this film is a mess.
Yeah. I mean, Richard Donner came back to produce this one. That's why I think it's a little bit better than the second movie. It doesn't have his voice. Also, didn't have the, you know, firing a director halfway through. So yeah, this is probably the better sequel. Like I said, neither one of us have seen the first Omen. So
actually, I will argue with that. Honestly, I kind of like Omen 4.
Omen 4?
Yeah, the Awakening.
Okay,
TV movie.
Fuck it. We both watched this. We weren't going to discuss it, but let's discuss it. I thought it was so fucking cartoonishly insane that I couldn't stop cackling.
Oh, yeah, it's... Okay, all right. I'm going to break down this film very briefly for the audience, because this is definitely one that would be harder to find, technically, even though it's on Max, I think, or Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
But, basically, it's... So what if the Omen, but it's a girl, and, you know, sure, whatever, and I guess New Age is going to save the world because Satan hates that shit.
No, is this Sam Neill's kid?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what's implied.
Yeah.
Because it's like she's 10 years old, so 81 to 91 makes sense.
Yeah. Her performance is so fucking bananas, though. I mean, there's no subtlety whatsoever, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And some of the deaths are so like, hey, this is Canadian television budget. Here we go.
Funniest thing is that all the whimsical music at the opening, and then it just kind of keeps going, where it's just what the fuck is with this movie score?
TV movie sequels fascinate me because it's like, oh, or continuations in a TV series. Like, we got to get some more money out of this franchise, just a little bit more. You know, we had the Planet of the Apes TV series. We had those two Revenge of the Nerds TV movies and this all around. You know, like the early 90s is like when people are like, we can either go direct to video or straight to TV. What do we do?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. And this is where I kind of like, if you took, I'll give this thing. Leave the script alone, you know. I think had this film actually been released as a theatrical release, as an actual film, not a TV movie, so you have a little bit more money for actors, a little bit more money for budget, so on and so forth, you know, a little more stuff for effects and things like that. This is where I think the film might have actually been halfway decent, because, yeah, it's bad. It is really, this is where two kind of flops on. This is really bad scene with superpowers. And as I was writing this note, then we got the doggy dropkick thing that happened where the new age chick has a dog dropkick her out a window. Now I'll still stand by this this belief, but still.
I actually think the main character, Faye Grant, is pretty good. Everybody else is just not up to snuff.
No, I think the cast isn't great. Acting is wildly all over the place. It's a TV movie, and especially at that time where they were making really bad TV movie sequels based off other things like Birds 2 and the like.
Right. So, yeah.
So compared this to Birds 2, this is a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah, well, I'll say probably the best TV movie sequel that I can think of off the top of my head is When a Stranger Calls Back. It takes everything that didn't work in the original and just fucking nails it on the head.
But yeah, it's like, but this film at least does kind of embrace how dumb the premise is.
Mm-hmm.
And at least is rolling with it. And yeah, I had more fun with this than any of the other sequels, and which is kind of weird. But at the end of the day, you watch these movies and you just kind of go like, shit, devil, chill out. You know, for this being that's supposed to be hiding in the shadows and manipulating stuff, he's pretty fucking blatant in his manipulations and stuff, where it's like, wow, a lot of coincidences seem to happen around Damien. I mean, to a degree that either Damien is a psychopath who's murdering everyone just around him, period, or he must be the most unluckiest fuck on the planet. Like, good lord, all that stuff happens, and somehow no one seems to put two and two together. Yeah, even if, like, I'm sorry, I'm not a particularly faithful person, but if I was reading about the, the proposed, someone who's going to rise to the level of the presidency, potentially. And you start learning about this guy's past, and he's like going, wow, there's a lot of red flags in this person's history.
Yeah, me, I'm too cynical. I would not believe until like the very last one. I was like, oh, well, shit. All right, well, that is the end of this episode. And thank you, John, for watching some silly horror movies at times.
Oh man, it was good to go back and actually watch them.
Yeah, the first one's still pretty rock solid, even though it's 70s. Like, this score is so big and there's so much pizzazz with the directorial. Like, now I don't think they would do that. Well, I don't know, I haven't seen the new one, so maybe they still go big.
Well, I would. It has to have the Latin choir singers at points. You have to have that.
All right, that is it. Have a good one.
Later, guys.